And while we await the start of the broadcast, today the bulk of today's programming is preempted. The programs you expect to hear, such as Grandpa Al Lewis and Radio Free Aaron, will, and I believe it runs into programs like Liquid Sound Lounge and Peter Beauchamp's All Mixed Up. Those programs will return next week. As I said, we're still waiting for the appearance from Berkeley of the Pacifica National Pacifica Interim National Board meeting. In the meantime, since they seem to be going up a little bit late here on the satellite, I may as well give you the rundown for the agenda as I have it here. It'll begin with a report from the acting executive director and a question and answer discussion. 12:45 will be the station reports. I assume that includes WBAI's. Let's see. Yep, it does. And 3:45 will be a lunch break, and I assume that means we'll be able to bring you some sort of programming from our end. 5:15, the treasurer's report. 5:45, finances and fundraising, with a brief report from the auditor, a review and adopt of fiscal year 2002 budget, and a process to prepare fiscal year 2003 budget. And I believe I hear something. Yes, I do. It's very faint. Well, we'll assume that they'll have that up soon. We'll keep it in the background here until they begin.
I'm not hearing myself.
Well, we hear you. Whoever you are. This is coming in over the satellite, by the way. Ah, there we go. Okay.
Because it is continuing to forge community across generations of women who are former prisoners, attorneys, social justice activists, scholars, service providers. And I'm not sure how many states we represent or how many countries. I'm wondering, is Debbie Kilroy here? Oh, all right. Debbie Kilroy from Sisters Inside in Brisbane, Australia. We had the opportunity to attend a really inspiring conference some months ago in Brisbane, organized by Sisters Inside. I want to say that at this historical juncture, we really need community. We need solidarity. We need those feelings of connectedness. We need this sense of connectedness now, perhaps more than ever before. When I began to think about how I would frame my remarks here at this conference, I should say that my deliberations were interrupted by the news that a very close friend, and Ellen has already mentioned her, a poet, citizen of the world, had lost her 10-year-old battle with breast cancer. Among the many causes with which June Jordan was associated, she made sure that her poetry, her spirit, and the poetry and the spirit of her students, she made sure that that poetry and those spirits penetrated the walls of women's prisons. This evening, I do want to reflect, along with the previous participants, and I don't know if Toshi Regan is still here. She is just so wonderful. She makes us all feel good. She gives us all hope. And I want to talk a little bit about the current challenges we face as we try to minimize and hopefully eventually abolish the part played by prisons in the lives of so many women and men, poor women and men, especially from communities of color. I want to urge us to seriously think about abolitionist strategies. Abolitionist strategies that can strengthen the important and difficult work of immediately attending to the humanity of imprisoned women. But I do not feel able to take on these tasks until I have said a few words about June Jordan. And perhaps, as Ellen suggested, we can dedicate the work of this conference to her memory, and perhaps also to the memories of activists like Judy Berry, who died of breast cancer and devoted her life to saving the earth, earth first. A couple of days ago, we experienced an amazing victory when the FBI agreed to settle a $4.4 million suit brought by Ellen Berry's family and her comrade. This is one victory against the FBI at a time when the Bush administration is trying to further extend the FBI's powers of surveillance. So we definitely need to celebrate that. And as Ellen pointed out, we need to remember Virginia Blackburn, and we need to remember Cherise Shumate, and we need to remember Rosemary Willoughby, who died as a consequence of medical neglect, like Cherise Shumate, medical neglect that runs rampant in women's prisons all over the world. And there's also a victory here we can celebrate. I think Cassandra Shaler and now, who helped to win a
seem to have lost the satellite signal from this conference in Berkeley. What we'll be listening to for the better part of the day until 9 p.m. tonight is the Pacifica Interim National Board meeting from Berkeley, California. And let's see. So right now we should be listening to a report from the acting executive director and a question and answer discussion. But as you hear, or don't hear, nothing seems to be coming off the satellite. In the background, here's some Django Reinhardt. Let's see. So we were reading, giving you the rundown on the schedule. We got to the lunch break at 3:45. 5:15 p.m., the Treasurer's Report. Yes, we did the 5:45 p.m. finances and fundraising, including the 2002 and 2003 budgets. 7:30 p.m., Personnel Committee, and a proposal for establishment of a national committee and discussion of candidate confidentiality issues. 8 p.m. tonight, discussion of proposal on issues related to race and nationality at Pacifica. 8:45, report on the status of Democracy Now, and 9 p.m., the meeting is adjourned until tomorrow, Sunday. You're listening to a live broadcast from Berkeley, California, of the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting from the Wheeler Auditorium at the University of California, Berkeley campus. Unfortunately, there seems to be a problem with the satellite feed, and we'll return to that meeting as soon as we can. In the meantime, I guess I'll let you listen to Django Reinhardt while I find out what's going on. Well, we seem to have solved that problem, and we apologize for that outage. And we go now back to Berkeley, California, for the Pacifica Interim National Board meeting.
What your expectations are for the day, what are some of the important things that the board is going to try to deal with today?
Okay, we're going to have, first of all, the announcement was made last night about us having a new executive director,
right,
who is really our old interim executive director, Dan Coughlin. And I've worked with Dan, for Dan, beside Dan, so I'm really glad to see him in that position. It was a very hard choice. We only had two candidates to choose between. The third candidate was a woman from this area. I don't know if you know her, Alma Johnson, I think.
No, I don't.
And she dropped out shortly before the final round of interviews. And I'm really sorry I didn't get a chance to meet her. They said she was a really good candidate. But the two that we did interview, it was hard to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, so, well, can we hire them both? No, we have the charge of hiring one executive director. And I'd heard so much about Marty before I met her.
Marty Derlin, who
yes,
was the other
from
candidate.
From Boulder, Colorado. And got to know her over the last year. I got to know her when we were locked out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, it's a little sad, you know, to say no, which is really what you're saying. But I'm really hopeful and looking forward to Dan just taking us forward, you know, at least the day-to-day activities of the network.
Well, in my opinion, we had two really, really good candidates, and I understand several more we had a very thorough process, and there were a lot of great candidates. I think there was a pool of nine originally that it was boiled down to from 65.
Yeah.
And there were some really tough choices that were made. A lot of really great candidates. So that is heartening that there were that many really good candidates who were willing to get into the mix
into
of Pacifica and try to help it. And I think we would have done well with either Dan or Marty. So
yes.
It's great that we're getting the opportunity to even sit here and talk about the fact that we have a new executive director and we've had a process that's involved the board. And, you know, needless to say, both of you and I know that in the past that didn't happen, that the executive directors were appointed and probably half or part of the boards didn't even know who the new executive director was or what the process was or if there were any candidates that were interviewed or nothing. So this is a new day, and it's a really great thing that we're doing here. And let's maybe run through some of the other things that
that
we're going to try to accomplish today, and then maybe you can tell us what you hope will come out of this board meeting for you personally as a board member. What are you really hoping to see?
Yeah, because I got some things I really want to see happen.
Yeah.
We're going to have station reports, which are always interesting because you want to know what's going on around the network at the other stations. We'll be hearing from you today.
That's right.
And the big deal today, where everybody's going to be focused, is on the treasurer's report. We're going to talk about money. And that's what everybody just about is interested in. I know everybody wants to know where the money went and how much we have left to pay. And we're going to have Ross Wisdom. He's our auditor. He's going to come in and talk about something. People are concerned because we don't have a budget yet.
Yes.
And I keep telling a couple of folks, I've seen large institutions function without a budget for a very long time, and I always point to New York State. They go for months without a budget, so you can do it. And I'm not trying to make light of the fact.
Well, then you also see, we have a really great surplus this year in this state, and then the next year they take the surplus all away because they overspent and so on and so forth. So,
but I'm just saying, you know, I just do that to needle people. But
it works, I'm sure.
It does. They just look at me. But anyway, we are going to talk about money today and get some actual figures from Ross Wisdom and from Jabari Zakia, who is our treasurer. And then later on, we're going to talk about, they're talking about having a personnel committee. And one of my main interests of late has been an item on the agenda about issues related to race and nationality at Pacifica. And we've done a lot of work about that back in New York, about trying to get some statements and get some get something down, some kind of policy
mm-hmm.
for Pacifica. I know this is Pacifica, and my initial reaction is, oh, we don't need to do that. This is Pacifica. We don't need to worry about race. But, honey, I found out I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
A whole lot.
Let's say it's an ongoing process, and it probably always will be. But to have the policy is very, very important to have, you know, and to follow the policy, too.
So. Yep.
Now, we've also been joined here by Dave Furtick from Los Angeles area.
How's it going? Great, Jim. Janice, how you
doing?
Hey, Dave. As an old lefty gray beard white guy, I am absolutely, really enthusiastic about the fact that we're going to do a policy. What I'm more enthusiastic about is we're going to do practice. And we've all been thinking for years and years and years,
mm-hmm.
for most of our lives, as activists and otherwise, how do you go beyond statements of diversity?
Because
we've had statements for a long time.
So. And they're important. Just like Leslie's statement yesterday about the tone and pacific nature of our communication amongst each other and with others.
The lack of pacific.
Well, the lack of, but saying that we need to be such.
Yeah.
And we need to seek diversity, and we need to act affirmatively to do it. But acting, affirmative action means action. And simplistic as it may sound, I think the first way you do it, among many, I hope and pray, there will be many other approaches that I'm not thinking of right now, is you take the microphones out and you hand them out in the community. You give training to everybody, and you go out and you empower. You give the tools and let people empower themselves.
Well, you were saying earlier, Jim, about asking what are some of the things that I want personally. And one thing I'm going to propose is that a line item for next year be that we get training budgets. I came into Pacifica in a training program.
Mm-hmm.
And it just it's corny, I know, but it changed my life.
What training program was that?
We Mario Murillo, who was our public affairs director, had instituted a formal program where people came in as interns. And there were several of us, I guess maybe at that time, it wasn't as neat as the package I think that people have here at KPFA. And it wasn't as structured as that, but it was a structured program. And I think there might have been 25 or 30 of us. And some of us stayed around, and it really made a difference. Because frankly, a lot of times, women of color aren't the ones who are engineers.
Yeah.
And they don't learn the technology. So I was made to learn it by Bernard White and Harold Maitland, but it really helped.
That's really how the training program at KPFA was born, to recognize, in all instances of media, how women and people of color have been shut out.
Mm.
But then to really realize that where can we initially make a very powerful difference, and it is often in the technical area, where if you become technically empowered, then you can run your own board, you can do your own program, and the world that should not be denied is opened up. And so we at KPFA in the early 80s decided this is what we were going to do, and we were going to formalize the structure so it wouldn't be this, well, if you come in maybe on a Tuesday, we'll sit you down and give you some training. But one of the things that we have evolved with our program over the year is to try to make sure that once people go through the training that they actually have the opportunity to stay or continue to do something or become incorporated into the station, that they don't just get the training and then have no place to go. Not that we're calling it, it's not a job placement service, but it's really making an effective change throughout the entire station, so that you'll find people from the apprenticeship program hopefully in all areas of the station. And I think that this is one of my things too that I'll probably be talking about in my report down there, and not to give it all away or anything, but I do think that we need to formalize structures throughout Pacifica, not only for training programs but for mentoring programs, where we actually also set up for either scholarships for people or fellowships to take the training program, or to have those scholarships or fellowships after they take the training program to help them gain more skills in other areas that they're interested in radio. And I think by actually having some sort of formal structure, both on the national level and on the station level, we're going to go a long way in terms of opening up the stations in a way that we haven't done before.
You know, Jim, I think it's important for us to remain focused on the fact that it's not really about Pacifica, it's about the mission of Pacifica. And that includes when training people to recognize that there are other outlets besides Pacifica. It's not just about the 167 hours or whatever we have, but it's about training people so that they can go to IMC, they can go on the net. At KPFX, we have a net broadcasting.
And they're on this morning, as a matter
right. And furthermore, you know, with Fernando Velasquez and others doing training around different neighborhoods of L.A., if we say that you're trained and now you can only speak to Pacifica, of course, that's a limited venue. It's great, but we need to expand where people can take these communication
exactly.
skills and empowerment and take it to other venues. And eventually, you know, we have people, as mentioned yesterday, all throughout Africa who've been trained by Pacifica. Well, we hope to continue that throughout the world.
I was going to say, yeah, I think people do that. A lot of them end up on NPR back in the U.S.
You know, I think you're being
yeah,
called
being
to the
paid.
Stage area.
Well, enough play, we got to go to work.
Yeah.
Thanks
yeah.
so much.
Okay,
and
thank you, Jim.
I'll see you down there in a few minutes.
Very shortly.
Okay. So, Janice Bryant from New York and Dave Furtick from the Los Angeles area, both Pacifica, interim Pacifica National Board members, and we're very grateful that they were able to stop up in our booth this morning or this afternoon if you're on the East Coast. And again, I will remind you of the fact that you're listening to KPFA in Berkeley, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, KPFK in Los Angeles, WBAI in New York, and then on the webcasts that are going around the country, radioforhouston.org, WBIX.org, KPFX.org, and IMC in Washington, D.C., the Indy Media Center. And let's go to the podium here at Wheeler Auditorium and see Leslie Kagan is beginning to make remarks. The board members are still coming in, so I'm curious to see what she's saying here.
The folks who are starting late, especially those people listening on the air, I know you were tuning in promptly, waiting for us, so we are sorry. I want to say, first of all, I want to just introduce, I forgot to do this yesterday. Sitting right behind me here is Ted Weisgau. Ted has been serving, continues to serve, as our parliamentarian for these meetings. We want you all to know why he's here and who he is, and we want to thank him for, in a volunteer way, providing his service for us and for the organization. So thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
Hopefully, this is a position at these meetings that we don't have to turn to too often, but it's always good to have somebody fulfilling this role and sitting and helping us here. I also want to make one very brief comment. Both yesterday, and I heard overheard some comments this morning, the people here in the auditorium were saying, oh, this is such a small turnout, and they seemed upset about it. Mm-hmm. Let me just say, speaking as an individual, I'm not upset about it. What I assume this means is that, first of all, people are listening on the radio and on the webcast and don't need to literally be here in the room. But perhaps it also means that it's a reminder about why we engage in the struggle and why we do this work is because we are part of a larger, bigger peace and social justice, economic justice movement. So maybe people don't come to these meetings because they're out doing some other organizing or involved in some other efforts, and they don't need to be here right now because they're doing other work. And it seems to me that should be our goal. I mean, it's great, and we want people to come to the meetings and engage in this process with us. But again, I think the whole point of this struggle to reclaim Pacifica was not just to reclaim Pacifica, but was to help encourage more and more activism in a whole range of social change movements. So I personally don't feel bad. Of course, I would love to see all my friends here. But I don't feel bad, and I don't think we should feel bad. We are doing our work here at these national meetings, and we're doing our work in each of the five cities and at the local meetings. And when you add all that up, there are a lot of people involved in this process. So please, don't feel discouraged, but let's just keep forging ahead and moving ahead with our work. Okay, I think now we do really have a quorum here at the table, and we are going to begin. The first item on the agenda this morning is a report on the written agenda that was passed out. It says the report from the acting executive director as of yesterday that's a mistake, and now a report from the executive director, Dan Coughlin. Again, we want to thank Dan for accepting our invitation to take up the permanent position as the executive director.
Thank you, Leslie. And let me just echo some of the comments that the board members were making yesterday about the new spirit of unity and purpose on the board. Over the last 5 months, pulling the network back from the brink of bankruptcy would not have been possible without the unity of the board and the commitment of the board in helping to systematically tackle the issues that face this network. So thank you very much to the Pacifica National Board for all your work and efforts over the last period of time. As you all know, the new Pacifica board and executive leadership inherited a financial and administrative nightmare in January of this year. The network had been looted and left rudderless. Stations did not even have funds to buy a paperclip, let alone a pair of headphones, and critical services like telephones and postage were being cut off. Pacifica's transmitters were under threat, including KPFK's historic tower on the top of Mount Wilson. With no chief financial officer or controller and chaos reigning in the national office, the network was on the verge of collapse. An independent financial review published in February reported that Pacifica faced a 2008 calendar budget gap of $1.5 million and a deficit of $4.8 million. Some stations were facing serious deficits. WBAI was looking at a hole of $350,000, KPFK $250,000. With only $11 million in annual revenue, these debts posed a serious threat to the organization's survival, and bankruptcy was openly being contemplated. Today, 5 months later, the network stands alight with the promise of a new day. The Pacifica Foundation has a balanced budget, and all of our stations are operating in the black. Local stations now have authority over their own finances, and money that is raised locally is largely being spent locally. The network's overall debt has been slashed from $4.8 million to an estimated $1.3 million. And that's just the latest word from our accountant, Ross Wisdom, as of last night. That's been tremendous progress that has been made. Perhaps most exciting for many listeners and staff members and producers around the network is that during this process, we pioneered a unique form of programming, the UltraCast, showcasing in a unique day-long pinwheel format the talent and voices of all of Pacifica's five stations and the Pacifica Radio Archives. The UltraCast was unveiled earlier this year in an inspiring show of network-wide solidarity. The entire Pacifica community rallied to save KPFK's transmitter. I'm pleased to report that as of this week, as of this next week, the KPFK transmitter is slated to be up at full power, up from its weakened 8,000 watts to a full-blown 112,000 watts. Many thanks to Pacifica's consulting engineer Don Mussel and to the entire KPFK staff and community in Southern California for this great achievement. The financial turnaround and the new collaborative spirit has occurred because of the commitment and talent of many selfless and wonderful staff and community members. Indeed, the entire Pacifica community moved aggressively and quickly to deal with the financial crisis. At the national level, the strategy was simple: cut costs and raise revenue, while at the same time maintaining financial transparency and the integrity of Pacifica's most important assets, its five stations. National units took sharp cuts. We rolled back on salaries for national management and general managers and program directors. Wage cuts for top managers ranged from 33% to 10% and 5% for national staff and local management. Unions and local staff around the system deferred pay raises, and everybody tightened their belts. Literally, nickels were being treated like manhole covers. Tough decisions, of course, had to be made. On February 15th, we closed down the network news operations and reorganized the KU satellite system, saving an estimated $1.2 million a year. Democracy Now! Took a 35% cut, the Pacifica Archives 20%, and the National Office contracted sharply. A voluntary layoff package was initiated at all of Pacifica's stations, and particularly WBAI in New York, Pacifica's largest station. We also stopped immediately the golden parachute severance packages that had been handed out to former staffers and executives. In January, Those claims and packages involved some 21 staff, totaled more than $650,000. We reviewed Pacifica's legal obligations on those claims, and thus far the network has paid out only $140,000 to a handful of former staffers. We understand that many people quite rightly feel that these packages were immoral and unethical, and nobody should be permitted to loot the network like this. All of us agree. However, because of legal liabilities, Pacifica had to make good on some of these claims. In our estimation, it would have been more costly to challenge the claims than to pay them out. In other words, it was better not to throw good money after bad. This strategy has enabled us to save at least $500,000 for the network. We also have begun to deal with the 8 large professional service firms who claim that Pacifica owed them some $2.2 million. There has been a payment of some $512,000 from Pacifica's insurance company to 2 separate law firms, Williams & Connolly and Fulbright & Jaworski. Further, we have begun challenging the bills from other firms and entering into prearranged settlement plans with them. Thus far, we have managed to reduce the claims from $2.2 million to about $1.6 million, a reduction of nearly 30%. No payments directly from Pacifica have been made to any of these alleged creditors to date. However, we will be paying out some of these outstanding obligations in the very near future over the course of the years ahead. On the fundraising side, I'm pleased to report that Pacifica's revenue has increased sharply over the last 5 months. Listeners have rallied in extraordinary numbers to our call for support, holding house parties, inviting friends and colleagues over, and then sending into the national office dozens of checks. In the New York tri-state area, there have been no less than 4 separate fundraising events organized by listeners and WBAI staff in the last several months. Again, many thanks to those individuals and foundations who have rallied to Pacifica at this critical time. Every dollar counts. And I would just want to take the opportunity to urge the entire Pacifica community to stay vigilant at this point. We still have tremendous financial problems, especially over this period to the end of the year. It is imperative that all of us still continue to organize fundraising events around the country in our homes, at the stations, that the local advisory boards participate as well, because we still have a difficult time ahead, especially over the next 6 months or so. The good news is, though, at the station level, we're seeing record fundraising. Pacifica Station and KPFT in Houston, for instance, posted a record winter fund drive of $390,000, smashing their old mark of $280,000. WPFW in Washington just posted its largest ever spring fund drive in history, $420,000. At WBAI, listeners pledged some $900,000, an all-time spring fund drive record, and up 55% from the $580,000 pledged during last year's spring fund drive. Listeners at KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles also pledged a record, $618,000, up 45% from the previous year's spring fund drive total of $425,000. And at Pacifica's flagship station here in Berkeley, 94.1 FM, listeners pledged a spring fundraising drive record of $621,000. The drive was capped by the largest single day of fundraising in the station's 53-year history, with some $104,000 pledged on the drive's last day. These spring fundraising records follow Pacifica's highest ever winter on-air drive this past January and February, generating nearly $3.5 million in on-air pledges at Pacifica's 5 stations. I'm also pleased to report that the national office has been aggressive in raising funds as well. We helped spearhead the Save Our Signal Day that raised more than $200,000 for KPFK's transmitter. The April 20th day of programming raised more than $40,000. That was the live coverage of the peace and social justice marches in Washington on April 20th. And then our Juneteenth broadcast just this past week on Wednesday raised about $70,000. All five stations, as you all know, suspended their local programming to air this historic national broadcast, and more days of national fundraising and national programming are slated over the next few months. We are also planning a national mailing campaign, and we anticipate that these efforts will help us shrink the outstanding debt some more. In recent months, the Pacifica National Office has also reactivated many of our long-dormant revenue-generating sources, like the subsidiary communication authority channels at our five stations, the sidebands. Currently, of the 15 sidebands available to Pacifica, two are being used by Pacifica stations KPFA and KPFK, and six are being leased to private vendors. The current monthly revenue from these sideband contracts is about $44,000 a month, or $528,000 annually. Two of the frequencies are just coming back online with the KPFK transmitter project finishing, and three others have leases pending. If these leases are signed under the current terms being offered, Pacifica would earn about another $15,000 a month. At the same time as raising revenue and tightening our belts, we've moved to strengthen Pacifica's financial systems, procedures, and personnel. The introduction of two separate financial software systems in the last year, as well as a new budgeting procedure and the move of the accounting office from LA to DC, left the entire financial spine of the network in crisis. This was in the midst, obviously, of the political and legal crisis of last year. The accounting office was moved from LA to DC and a new software system introduced. So you can appreciate some of the difficulties that the financial office has been facing in recent months. In April, we gathered all the network business managers in Washington, D.C. for a three-day training in software, and we are confident that the accounting system should be all up to date and fully operational by the end of the summer. Though important strides have been made, challenges remain. Pacifica's fiscal year 01 audit needs to be completed, and we're hopeful that that will be done within the next month or so. Further, central services allocations, what we call central services allocation, that is the relationship, the financial picture between the local stations and the national office, remains also to be clarified. That whole relationship between national and the stations completely broke down last year as the former management arbitrarily raided station accounts to pay for exorbitant expenses incurred by the previous administration. We are still putting the pieces back together and are hopeful that central services allocations will be running normally in the next couple of months. And we very much appreciate all the patience and support of the five Pacifica stations while we get that process finished. Pulling Pacifica back from the brink of bankruptcy is the result of much hard work and sacrifices by many people. Deputy Executive Director Verna Avery Brown and I would especially like to acknowledge and thank the hard work of the national accounting staff led by Interim Controller Yasmin Bryan. I don't know if Yasmin is here. Is she?
Yes, she is.
I can tell you that all-nighters have returned to Pacifica, and it gets harder and harder as the years go by. But Yasmin and the staff have been pulling a lot of all-nighters and weekends, and they've done a really tremendous job. We'd also like to thank and acknowledge the support and wisdom and experience of two very important managers in the network. One is KPFA Interim General Manager Jim Bennett and the entire KPFA community. Well, as that of WBAI GM Valerie Van Esler and the entire WBAI community as well. Without the support of these two leaders and community, this station, this network would have collapsed indeed just a few months ago. Their insights and commitment, as well as that of their staffs and the communities they represent, to the well-being of the national network have been indispensable over the last 5 months. When Verna and I came before the Pacifica National Board in Los Angeles just in a few months ago, we laid out two clear goals for the organization. Number one was, of course, restoring some sense of financial stability. And number two was the process of reconciliation and reform at the five Pacifica stations. I'm pleased to report that all five Pacifica stations are working collaboratively together and forging new relationships with communities and local advisory boards. new leadership is being put into place or is in the process of being put into place at each of the five stations. For the first time in Pacifica's recent history, there's a participatory process for the change in leadership, a process that directly involves Pacifica's key stakeholders, paid and unpaid staff, union and management, local advisory board members and national board members, and listeners and community organizations. This process led to the hiring of a new GM at KPFK in Los Angeles and a new general manager at KPFT in Houston. And GM search committees are presently under formation and even underway at WBAI, WPFW, and KPFA here in Berkeley. The leadership and staffing transitions at the local stations have at times been extremely difficult. But we have adopted a clear policy of what we call deactivation after Hugo Chavez's description of his policies in Venezuela in the post-coup period. We're trying to take the gun out of Pacifica politics and spending the extra time to resolve problems. We are pleased that much of the contestation and acrimony that has characterized the previous years has largely been absent. This is because the new reform leadership has been careful to approach issues in a collaborative manner. We have sought to forge real partnerships with Pacifica's unions and worked hard to resolve disputes before they have festered and grown out of control. Mediation and dialogue have largely replaced confrontation and conflict, and I'm pleased to report that two union contracts have been signed in the last 5 months, one with CWA and KPFA, and one with AFTRA covering national programming on the East Coast. We are also negotiating new AFTRA contracts for paid workers at WBAI in New York and in WPFW in Washington, D.C. We will be opening up contract negotiations in the near future with unpaid workers at WBAI. In the wake of last December's legal settlement, Pacifica's local advisory boards are assuming a much more important role in Pacifica's governance than in many, many years. The national office has sought to work hard with many of the GMs and local advisory board members to develop a new spirit of cooperation in lab-station relations. Still, many questions remain about the extent of lab responsibilities and the overall relationship between policy and operations. And you'll be hearing more of this from the lab chairs and the GMs in the moments to come. Most of these issues will be hammered out over the course of the next several months as new bylaws are written and adopted. In the meantime, the lab chairs, the national office, and the station managers are trying to develop guidelines as to how the relationship might move forward in this interim period. Another key issue that has emerged during this period of healing and reconciliation has been programming. How do local Pacifica stations articulate Pacifica's mission in their day-to-day programming? What are the structures and processes around programming? Last March, Verna Avery Brown and I asked KPFA programmer and former PNB board member Robbie Osmond to form a commission to look at Pacifica programming and the programming process. The Mission Commission was conceived as a way to enlist the help of some of Pacifica's most thoughtful and politically committed friends in our collective effort to examine how decisions are made within Pacifica and to consider how the way we make those decisions affects what we end up being, what we end up doing, and how effective we end up being as an agent for peace and social justice. The idea of the commission was based on the premise that it would be helpful to enlist the help of more of Pacifica's politically committed friends in our collective effort to rebuild the network. The idea was to develop a mechanism for a structured examination of issues like how decisions are made within Pacifica and how the way we make those decisions affects who we end up being and what we're doing. The need for this work is part of a broad effort within the network to strengthen and, where necessary, reestablish ties between progressive leadership and the network. The old leadership of the Pacifica Foundation had, over the course of many years, systematically undermined every avenue of accountability, communication, and reciprocal power within the organization and between the organization and communities and struggles that it exists to serve. There is a need to facilitate and encourage direct communication in the expectation that that would help reestablish healthy and appropriate relationships within the larger Pacifica family and between Pacifica and the broader progressive social change movements. The name Mission Commission was catchy, but but in the end it created misunderstanding. Organizing a commission of well-respected and thoughtful friends from outside the immediate Pacifica family was envisioned as part of the effort, but was not the heart of the project. As it happened, the difficulties presented for several of the prospective participants by the commission led to the conclusion that other ways of accomplishing the work would be better. The work is ongoing. We have been meeting with friends whose activism in a wide spectrum of progressive efforts might otherwise limit their ability to take part in the day-to-day operations of Pacifica and our stations to ask for their insights and active participation and to bring them closer to the network. We have held several useful and productive meetings on both coasts, and more such meetings are planned. And there are a number of different options being discussed on how to move forward, including a national programmers conference at some point in the near future. There are a number of different issues that are still affecting the network in terms of the physical plant and the transmitters. They're in my report, some figures and facts on the Pacifica website. I think I will leave that for your own examination. This report of the executive director will be published up on the website. I will just conclude by saying that all of us at the national office very much appreciate the patience and work of the entire Pacifica community and the interim board. As we continue with our difficult work of restoring Pacifica to financial health and moving forward with the reform process, please know that we do so openly and honestly. We not only have had an open books policy, publishing our accounts on the web, but we've also sought to inform the wider Pacifica community exactly what the issues are that we face and how we're trying to tackle them. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Just before, I just wanted to ask Verna if she might just share a few moments.
Permanent Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation, Dan Kaufman.
I wanted to take an opportunity to thank the entire interim board as well for selecting Dan and thereby giving me another opportunity to continue to serve as Deputy Executive Director. We understand that he had a worthy opponent and it was a competitive process, but I believe that the right person was selected for this position, and thank you for it. A competitive process that I could say I was hoping that Dan would get it, but the truth is I was praying that Dan would get this position. As the Deputy Executive Director, my post has been somewhat ambiguous from the start, and I'm assuming that now this means I can at least drop the interim part from my title, yet to be decided. Sometimes I feel like Vice President Dick Cheney. That's not the war room part, but I guess I get to call some of the shots then. But we're still working out exactly how to share the division of labor, because this really and truly is a huge job. This is a job that's going to take an enormous amount of dedication, patience, and willingness to pull this network together if we are indeed going to evolve Pacifica into the highest version of Pacifica. And that's really the goal here, to develop this network into the highest possible version of itself. We're not perfect. We know it. I also know that there are a whole host of individuals who line up the microphone and tell us just how imperfect we are, at least we forget, and we welcome that. I took notes during the public comment session last night and during the public forum on Thursday night, and I hear your concerns. Kelly Ramirez was right in the sense that we can do more in our coverage of the so-called war against terrorism that selected President George W. Bush has waged against the innocent men, women, and children of Afghanistan. This war that seems to have no boundaries. I would argue, however, that we are back on track. And the 15 hours of aggressive, provocative, in-depth, gripping programming that we produced on June 10th around this network is a clear example of what we're capable of doing, and a wake-up call to all of those who thought Pacifica was down for the count, that we're on our way back, and we're coming back strong. 5 U.S. Congresspeople took part in that historic broadcast. 5. And 2 of them called into our producer, Joya Jefferson Newry, and said they had heard about the show on the air. One was in a taxi cab and heard the show and wanted to be included. They know the power of Pacifica. They know the potential this network has. And had Pacifica not been preoccupied fighting an internal war, we might have been able to have been a major voice of opposition to this war. But I submit it is not too late. We still have a chance to provide the kind of programming that will give these lawmakers the ammunition they will need to provide to confront and challenge the policies and the direction of the warmongering right-wing conservative lawmakers in the House and the Senate, who are leading this country and this world down a path of death and destruction, instead of down a path of peace and social justice. Pacifica is the voice that has been absent from this dialogue. These lawmakers need a unified, vocal, on-point Pacifica, cranking out the truth about what George W. knew or didn't know, and revealing the embarrassing illegal links between the Bush family and the Saudi Arabia oil connections in the midst of it all, being that drum major for peace that Pacifica's founder, Lou Hill, intended this network to be. Maybe, just maybe, we could change some minds in this country and see more Americans waving banners calling for peace instead of flags praising the war. Maybe we could provide enough information to give some of those congressmen and women the courage to speak out loudly and boldly against this inhumane, unjust war. And maybe, just maybe, in the highest version of Pacifica, we will be a force to be reckoned with. That is our vision for this network, and it's going to take all of us working together towards that shared goal. It will mean the purple-haired, pierced naval activists will be working alongside the graying, balding, ponytailed activists, along with the dreadlocks and shaved head activists. It means we will become the Pacifica we were meant to be, and we will make a difference in this world.
Thank you. Vern Avery Brown and Dan Coughlin both for their ongoing, you know, very hard work and excellent presentation. Do you want to just see if there are any questions and comments from the members of the board? Before we do that, though, I forgot to announce earlier, if people here want to sign up to speak during the general comments section appropriate to your listening area, Gail, who's over here by the mic, can take your name now. So you can do that while we're moving the agenda ahead. Okay, so let's see. George and then Carol. Okay. George Barnstone from Houston.
No question.
Okay, he's just gathering his thoughts. I'm only doing this because we're on the air, and we should try and remember that.
Good.
Right, good to remember that. And again, I want to welcome the people who are here today, but also listening on to the webcast and to the broadcast both. Thank you.
Dan, it's George Barnstone. In the second paragraph of your report, you say the budget gap of 1.5 and deficit of 4.8. Would you please distinguish those two?
Yeah, sure. When we came into office in mid-January, we didn't even have a budget for FY02 or a budget for the calendar year for 2002. So one of the first things we had to do was get a budget together, and we decided it would be easier and make more practical sense to put together a calendar year budget as a quick start. And we hammered out a calendar year budget, and according to what we had put together and distributed, I think, in early February to the IPNB, it projected a budget deficit of $1.5 million for the calendar year. At the same time, when we walked into the station, literally our deficit, our debt, was $4.8 million. So one was a projected debt for the calendar year of 1.5, and the other was an actual, real, and existing debt of about $4.8
million. Okay, Carol.
Dan, on the two questions. You said that thus far we've paid out $140,000 in our stinky severance packages that we're holding our nose for. Is there any more that will need to be paid out under the terms of those Or is that the total amount that will be paid?
The only one that we're in dispute about, and we're relatively dispute is a relative term, I guess, but the only one that we're actually approaching litigation with is just one.
Oh, there's
those.
One, too.
So that is the only real liability that we face at this point. So we're relatively confident. I might say some of the staff have decided to come back and have expressed confidence in the new Pacifica leadership, and that's been great. Other staff, we've renegotiated some of the severance packages with, and still others, we have just determined that there has been no legal obligation for Pacifica to meet these. So there's been a variety of different approaches to the issue of the golden parachutes. But right now, we're pretty confident that most of that is behind us, except for, as I said,